Hello, and welcome to another episode of SolarWinds Tech Pod. In this episode, we'll be exploring the world of channel. When we say channel, think partner. We're joined by SolarWinds' longtime elite partner, SHI. I'm your host, Ashley Adams, joined by fellow host, Sean Sebring. Hey, Sean.
Howdy, Ashley. Excited for our topic today. Representing SHI is our guest for this episode, Aldo Massoni. Aldo, can you introduce yourself?
Sure. So, Aldo Massoni, I have 25, we'll say more than 20 years of industry experience. I think they said once you get over 20, you just say 20 plus years of experience. I've worked at multiple VARs, a couple manufacturers over my time in the industry, and really have had a lot of leadership roles, plenty of roles from deployment, implementation, design architecture. Currently have a role as a observability practice lead at SHI. So I think that's what brings us here today.
That's fantastic. Thank you. And we're really thrilled to have you with us, Aldo. So to get us started, I think a great kickoff is you already mentioned an acronym, VAR. What does that mean? Can you educate our listeners and just talk to us a little bit about what is channel? How does that relationship work in the IT industry?
Yeah, so I guess depending on what perspective you're looking at it. So from a VAR perspective, so someone like us at SHI, we resell a lot of products. And so we partner with manufacturers such as SolarWinds. And that's where the partnership or relationship comes in from that perspective, or the channel side of the house. And then the flip side is us working with our customers. So jointly, we have the same customer that we're working to support, their needs, or, giving them the right solution based on their challenges. But so yeah, from a partner perspective, it's the channel side. And from a relationship partnership perspective for the customers, that's the customer side of the house, and that's where the value added partnership comes from.
And so that's a VAR, right? Value added resource?
Value added reseller. Yeah. So we're reselling SolarWinds to our end customer.
Reseller. Oh. Yeah. I was asking for the customers. I totally knew what that meant.
Yeah. And when you think about it, it's not just, it's not just products that we sell, right? It's, services, implementation services, either, consulting, we can do assessments, whatever the customer needs. Value added can mean many different things.
So thinking about your experience on the side of SHI, working with SolarWinds, for example, how do you see that relationship between the partner and the business? And maybe who are some of the key contacts or stakeholders that you work with on a regular basis?
Yeah, so it's pretty interesting. So in my role, where I'm the practice lead, so I almost kind of have, two jobs, if you will, where I'm interacting with the channel, so which is the channel side of the SolarWinds business. And it's almost like I'm the channel side of SHI. And we work to educate basically each other. So I help educate, SolarWinds sellers and the channel team about SHI's capabilities and, why should we partner together? Again, what value can we bring not only to SolarWinds, but what value can we bring to our joint customers? And on the flip side of that, I also work with the field team. So our field sellers, both again, SolarWinds and SHI field sellers, to help, whether it's enable them from a, educational perspective, understanding the technology space. So what is observability, or the specific, solutions that SolarWinds can offer, and how does that meet the customer needs? So it's kind of multifaceted from my role perspective, but, we have engineers on the team that can really dig in from a technical perspective and understand, jointly customer needs, priorities, what features and capabilities do they need? And so that's how I think both from a SHI partnership perspective and SolarWinds, we help educate our customers together in driving, what's the best solution for them.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. How much would you say of your job is spent understanding the customer pain points? How much are you interfacing with the end customer these days?
Yeah, I'd probably say it's 50-50, because a lot of time is spent, working on the channel side and making sure I understand, what SolarWinds can offer our customers. And then on the flip side, it's working with our customers to see what their challenges and pain points are and, kind of helping bring the two together.
So I'm going to play ignorant, which I do very well on our tech pod here, not just because I am, but for our audience, of course. So we've talked a lot about, what value you're trying to bring, right? Working with SolarWinds, working with your customers. I'm going to ask a challenging question, which I know you'll be able to answer. Why would a customer rely on channel instead of going direct to the sellers of the software themselves, right? Can you really paint that picture of the value you bring to the customer?
SHI, we partner with 10,000 plus different solutions and manufacturers. And so when we go to basically our conversation with our customer is to solve whatever challenge they have, right? And each customer might be a little bit different. And so when we look at it from a solution perspective and not necessarily a product perspective, right? What solution is going to solve their challenge or their problem? So it's more about having a conversation with the customer, understanding, you know, again, what are their pain points? You know, what are they trying to get out of this solution, or what is this challenge? So we're trying to solve that challenge, right? Just what every engineer loves to do, which is solve challenges. But how are we going to solve that challenge, right? What is the right tool? Or in this case, I feel what is the right platform to solve that challenge, right? And I think that's one of the things where in this observability space, a lot of the current manufacturers are all evolving. So for me, it's actually very interesting because, like I said, I'm learning all the time what capabilities all the different players in the space have. And obviously, SolarWinds has been in this space a very long time, and their solution is evolving very well to meet customers' needs. So yeah, it's fun. I don't know if that answered the question.
No, it totally does. And it puts us both in a winning position, right? Because you get to represent the customer from an unbiased, right? Even if you do know what you feel is the strongest solution, which could be a SolarWinds tool or something else, it's just in our favor that, hey, we happen to recommend SolarWinds for a lot of this stuff. And I do want to, you know, if we get that chance, I'm sure we will expand on the observability platform. But yeah, it's being experts with tons of tools you can recommend at your disposal, tons of other customers that you can reference at your disposal. So it's just good to know what that channel is and having that unbiased representative there trying to solve your problems. And I hear you loud and clear on the solutioning side of things. That's what keeps me going.
Yeah. And I think that's what's exciting too, right? Especially when we can come up with a solution to a challenging problem. And like I said, from a SHI perspective, it's not just selling a product. It's, you know, is there services engaged that needs help, you know, like for observability, building the right dashboards or the right KPIs, or, you know, understanding what the customer's specific challenge is and figuring that out.
That kind of leads me to what I wanted to ask next, which is, what are some of the trends in major customer problems or pain points that you're seeing today? And you already touched a little bit on, I think we see in the market people not quite as interested in one point product to fix one specific problem, but the greater kind of solution sell. So yeah, could you expand on that for us a little bit?
Yeah. So definitely a lot of conversations happening from a tool sprawl perspective, right? I've got too many tools, and observability is not much different than your traditional, you know, security conversation, which is I've got a lot of niche tools that are looking at something specific, but now that's evolved and it's grown. And now I need, you know, 10, 20 tools to look at my entire environment, or I need 10, 20 people to manage all these different tools in my environment. So if I can consolidate my tools and kind of get that, I'll say it, I think we all know it doesn't really exist, but that single pane of glass, but that's where everyone wants to get to. But if I can minimize my tools, if I can go down from 20 tools to say 3 tools, you know, that's pretty good. So there's cost savings there from a manpower perspective, cost savings from a renewals perspective. And then everyone's working towards the same objective or looking at the same dashboard, right? So you're looking at the same type of data or the same, you know, language. Everyone understands, oh yeah, I'm looking in SolarWinds and I'm looking at this dashboard. I'm looking at the NPM module. I understand what's going on. I understand what this guy's talking about. So then when you get into those, you know, troubleshooting situations, you're not finger pointing because one person says, oh, I looked in this tool and it says this, and somebody else looked in a different tool and it says, no, that's not what it's saying. So if everyone's using the same tool, all the data says the same thing, it makes the teams work better together. And of course, if everyone works better together, then, you know, you don't have finger pointing and fighting, and, you know, everyone lives harmoniously.
Music to my ears. Yeah. Consolidating tools and breaking down silos, right? I love all these concepts. So this is going to be a spin on it, because when we're talking about consolidating to more of that platform approach where we're, you know, we're all using the same platform, same tool, it's harder to narrow down which persona you're talking to if everybody from different spaces is using it. So just from an observability standpoint, which again, we haven't really tapped into yet, but who are your personas when you're talking to folks about observability platforms?
Yeah, and it's very interesting, and it's a great point because it obviously depends on who you're talking to, on what their goals are, what their outcomes are, what do they want this tool to do. And again, to me, that's why this is kind of exciting, because an observability platform, a SolarWinds solution, can do so many different things. So it can be a lot to everybody, right? So your VP of IT, maybe he doesn't want the down and dirty. He doesn't care about, you know, server utilization, disk utilization, but he does care about overall performance. And, you know, they can set dashboards to measure KPIs and SLOs, right? And that's how the businesses get measured, right? So the business owners care about that overall performance and uptime. Or you dig down a little bit deeper and maybe you've got the network engineer who cares more about, you know, connectivity or latency between, you know, my WAN links. So the platforms can do that. Or, you know, if you're talking to a application developer or something, you know, how's my app performing? Is there latency talking to the database? You know, where is my latency? Because that's kind of what they most care about is from that perspective. So, yeah. So the cool thing is, depending on who you're talking to, they're going to have different wants and needs. And if you've got the right solution, the right platform, it can do all these things, right? And that's kind of when you bring it all together from a, say, event correlation perspective, right? So I'm ingesting all this data from all these different points, right? From the network, from the application flows, even from the security side of the house, connectivity. So I can see all these different things. When a problem occurs, you can more quickly pinpoint that solution. So you've got a tool that can ingest all kinds of data. What's the data that you want to see? How do you want to see it? And then again, the persona, it's what's the data and how do I want to see it? And you can, you know, slice it up anyway based on, you know, who's got what need.
So you got network, you got apps, you got servers, right? So with all these different folks involved, right, all these different teams, with the being on the same tool, what I like about it, and I'm gonna give you a position to talk about what is observability versus just your traditional monitoring in a second, because I want to hear everyone's individual interpretation of what it means, right? Because everyone's got a little bit of a different take on it almost. But I'm going to ask, what would you say is one of the best starting points, right? If I've got network that contributes to the health of a service, database, I've got the server utilization, right? All sorts of different things to look at. Is there any one area, any one specific part of what makes a service that you start with first, or do you try and get a few of the teams on board to say, we need to be checking the networking, we need to be checking the website, right? All of these different things at once, or do you really just start with one? What would that one be if it is one?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I would probably prefer to start on either the cloud or application side. Cloud is kind of more complex. It's that's where a lot of organizations are hosting. And when I say cloud, I'm not just saying, you know, AWS or GCP, not one, right? Typically, everyone's in multi-cloud today. Typically, everyone's got a hybrid environment. So they've got something in the cloud and something on-prem. And so that would be the best place to start. But typically, just, you know, based on traditional business, a lot of the relationships that we have anyways from an SHI perspective is usually on the networking side. So that's usually where a lot of the conversations start. But once we start talking about, you know, the advantages of the platform and the tools and being able to correlate different events, that's when kind of people understand, okay, this isn't just about looking at network connectivity or my switches and my routers. This is about application flows. This is about, you know, individual devices, or even when we talk about cloud, right? You can look at microservices and stuff spinning up and down. So that's when people, you know, you get all the players involved across the board. That's when you have the best conversations, because then you're kind of connecting the dots there.
I think something that I've noticed, even from my side on product marketing, is kind of getting that message across the different departments in which you just mentioned. Who's the one making the final business decision? It's at a level typically higher than maybe somebody who's actually running the product itself, like a network or system admin. Would you say that's correct?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, it's typically going to be VP of IT or even executive level, depending on how large the organization is. But typically, you are having to talk to and get buy-in from, you know, the managers and even some director levels, but typically your VP and above that are the decision makers.
So we've danced around it, and there's been a ton of context clues based off of, you know, the questions we've asked and how you've answered. But can you help us with your best definition on the fly here, right? Put you on the spot. How would you describe observability versus your traditional just monitoring?
when I kind of started this journey in this role, that was my first task, is defining what does observability mean. I spent quite a bit of time of looking, right? All the different players in the space, you know, how do they define observability? What does it mean to them? Look on up, you know, the Wikipedia definition and all this stuff. And it's like, okay, everything is a little bit skewed towards, you know, where that particular manufacturer started or came from, right? Where their strengths are. At SHI, basically, you know, me and my team, we created our own definition of what observability is. And really, we kind of shortened it down to it's having the visibility from an end-to-end perspective. So whether that's from the end user perspective, all the way through, if you think about the flow of an application or the transaction flow, all the way through the network and connectivity, whether it's on cloud or in a private data center, getting into that, you know, front end web server, into that back end database, and all the way back. So it's having end to end full stack visibility from that whole application flow or transaction flow.
You know, I hear the word health of a service. The term, I guess, comes up a lot, which I appreciate because it helps break down those silos to me instead of saying, this is your fault, your problem. We can identify with the source of a degraded service, but it's looking at it as a service now, which when we talk, you know, I'm an ITIL buff. So when we talk about a service, right, a service is comprised of many different things. And it felt so ephemeral and intangible, right? Because it's like, yeah, but you know, there's so many different little pieces that make up a service. With observability and the tools for observing the health of these services, it's making it tangible now, right? I can look at a service and see its network components, its server application, right? I can see all of those and they're actually represented digitally as a healthy or not healthy service. And I really like that. And so it's giving life to them as services. You can look at them instead of just as an entity, but a service comprised of many entities.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, if you think about, you know, what's important or from a health perspective, from an application perspective, and you have your, you know, application dependency mappings has become very important in understanding these different connection points, and the health of the service is dependent on those connections and to the latency between those connection points, you know, and that's really what determines primarily the health of that application, you know, is everything else performing as expected, you know, whether it's from a connectivity perspective, response perspective, whatever it may be. So yeah, so breaking down and be able to have that visibility at the service level is good.
You used a buzzword that we have on the ITSM side, dependency mapping, right? Which plays into CMDB, configuration management database. The way that observability and these newer tools work to me is not necessarily replacing, but evolving what CMDB was previously thought to do, right? Which is, I have in a spreadsheet, a row and a column that represents a configuration item, which is something that contributes to a service, right? Whereas now with stuff like observability tools, you can look at the service and see node-based even, right? What are the dependencies, right? What are the configuration items that are building this service, right? The tools doing all that for you. And it's in such a way that it's visually represented. It's not just dependency mapped from like, I said this is dependent on that, but they're building the service for you to look at and see its health and drill down and, you know, and it's got the live statistics, the data, the metrics around it. Now, while you're looking at it. So to me, these observability technologies are evolving what was previously done with CMDB, which was a little bit close to just a spreadsheet in a lot of ways of saying, here's all our potential services and the configuration items that make them, right? It's taking that just so much further.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree. I mean, especially when you can dynamically build these tables and the dependency mappings. That's been a challenge. I mean, you know, whether we're using manual Visio diagrams or manual spreadsheets to maintain things from a connectivity perspective, and then somebody goes in and changes something, then everything's out of date. So if you can dynamically map these constantly on a, you know, regular basis, that's amazing, right? And that's what these newer platforms can do.
Speaking of newer platforms and continuous industry buzzwords, AI ops, anomaly detection, all things that I think people are very excited to implement as well. How much are you hearing from customers that that's important to them when they're implementing a solution these days?
Yeah. So for me, what's interesting is I think that's where everyone wants to go, not only from an industry perspective, but, you know, our end customers, right? But what does that really mean to everyone? You know, means something different. Again, just like observability means something different to everybody. And can your organization really take advantage of AI ops or automation, right? Which is kind of where it's going. So you've got your tools like SolarWinds leverages AI ops to, you know, better define or understand what's happening in an environment. So whether it's setting that baseline, right? What is normal? And then there's the other sides of AIOps, which is, you know, the, again, like the integration to an automation tool and what is that doing? But I think a lot of it comes down to baselining and what is normal, and then what has changed from that, what is considered a normal state. And I think that's the advantage of the new systems, the new observability systems leveraging AI ops to understand what that is, you know, setting that baseline, setting what normal means. And again, that could be variations up or down, as opposed to somebody manually setting those thresholds, right? You know, kind of, again, the difference between observability and monitoring, you know, old school monitoring is standard threshold, hard thresholds that were set manually by somebody, right? We're leveraging AI ops, the new observability tools, those are all dynamically set and set over time.
Yes, that's fantastic. And I think what we hear from the customer base is that reduced alert fatigue that comes with that, because you can set up a million alerts, but just depending on which are the ones that you really want to look into, what are critical. I know on several tech pods, Sean has mentioned, you know, it's the IT guys who get called at 2 a.m. in the middle of the night on a Saturday. You know, is it something I got to get up for, or can we let this one pass? So impact to end users' lives as well.
Yeah, there's a certain ringtone. I have PTSD. If someone's, you know, at an airport and I hear that ringtone, it brings me back to my on-call days, and it's impactful.
Everyone has alert fatigue because you've got alerts that are false alarms, you know, or you've got the same alert going time and time again, and, you know, you need that alert suppression. And then you've got, now it's intelligent alerting. So it's, again, looking at that, correlating alerts and understanding, okay, you know, I'm getting 5 alerts from 5 different devices, but they're all stemming from this one, you know, primary alert. So I can suppress all these other alerts because I know this one is really the cause. So being able to focus in on that. So yeah, that's definitely one of the benefits of a good new solid observability platform.
Very cool. Now, we are kind of interested to pivot a little bit about what it's like to sell into a Fed or SLED market as compared to commercial. What are some of the challenges or pain points that you're seeing from that side of the house? And, you know, maybe what's more important to them, as they might not be as future forward looking into capabilities like AI ops, but what are some standards that they're looking for in solutions today?
Yeah, really. And again, from my perspective, national lead across the U.S., we support all different business segments. So I get it from all different customers, different customer perspective and what's important to them. You know, typically the enterprises are able to be a little more agile, a little more flexible as far as their spending, because it's, you know, this is a more immediate need, right? There's an immediate business impact because this application isn't working. So I need better visibility into that, right? How can we better understand or solve for this lack of visibility? When we talk about, you know, public sector, government, it's obviously a little bit slower because they want to make sure things are more secure, they're more tried and true. Something's been around in the field a lot longer, has to meet more security requirements, you know, maybe FedRAMP or something like that. So yeah, so there's typically a little more homework involved, making sure it meets all these different requirements. And then obviously, you know, the budget cycles are set. So if you don't get, you know, you don't have the conversation at the right point in time, you know, you may be waiting a whole year before you get that solution sold and in place. So I'd say extended sales cycles is definitely one of the big ones. But you're doing all the same stuff, right? You're going through all the same steps. You're going and having the customer conversation and understanding what do they really want to get out of this tool? What do they need from this tool or from the platform? And they need to see it and they need to understand it. So, you know, you go through your demos and your POCs to validate that the features and capabilities of the tool that you're recommending fits the needs of the customer. So all that process is still the same. It's just, you know, more around the sales cycle and the adoption, how quickly they might adopt some new technology.
I work with both sides as well, you know, supporting my sellers who are both for private sector and commercial. In the private sector, government, SLED, Fed, they're almost always working with an SHI, right? A reseller of some kind. Is it, again, just because you're able to give more of a agnostic view of tools? Is it because it's another layer of vetted, this person's, you know, we have SHI to help hold accountable if the solution is not correct? Why do you see that the government space, the private sector, relies more on partners than the commercial?
Yeah, I think it's all of that, everything that you just said, right? So it's a valued partnership, really, where we can bring our recommendations to them based on our experience, right? We're exposed to a lot more than they are. We have a lot more time to learn about these solutions than they do. So that's part of that education process. So we're bringing that to them. And at SHI, we developed a workshop to basically go through this kind of deep dive discovery and questionnaire of what's most important to you, what are the pain points, you know, maybe what tools are you using today and what do you like about these tools? And probably more importantly, what don't you like about them? You know, what don't they do? And so having those conversations and really understanding, you know, from the customer's perspective, what their goals and objectives are, what their pain points are, that helps lead us towards the right solution. And again, since we're exposed to a lot more, can kind of narrow that down and say, hey, here's the top one or two that we recommend based off your specific needs and based off the different, you know, solutions that are out there. And then let's quickly go into, you know, a demo and POC.
Yeah, just based off of that, it sounds like anybody would benefit just as much from a reseller. You don't have to be government, Fed, SLED, right? Just you're experts in the space of research and tool identification. So that's good. It's good to hear.
Aldo, we'd love to hear a little bit about how you feel on buying trends in the market today, kind of talking about perpetual versus subscription, people interested in moving to SaaS models. One analogy that's commonly used to kind of get that to settle into people's heads is, if you can remember the old days where we used to go to Blockbuster or a video store and you had to physically rent your VHS or DVD, that was a one-time purchase for that rental period. But now we've moved to the world of Netflix and all the amazing streaming platforms out there. You get a monthly subscription for everything all in one. So I know that translates to the tech world a little bit in terms of buying practices. What are you seeing out there today?
Yeah, that's a great analogy for sure. And I think something that SolarWinds did, gosh, I want to say it was at the end of last year. So with the new HCO hybrid cloud observability offering, they went with a subscription model. You know, and typically you're getting an annual or 3-year subscription, which typically works out best from a pricing perspective. But going to that model, which, you know, it's been around for a while, as opposed to a perpetual licensing where you're buying that, you know, one-time cost, but you're getting limited features, right? So you're paying for each. So from a traditional SolarWinds perspective, you're paying for each module, right? So NPM module or the APM module, whatever it may be, you're paying for each one of those individually, as opposed to with the HCO subscription model, then you've got an annual cost and you're getting all these features and you're actually getting additional features, which one, it makes it easier to consume those features and capabilities. So you can maybe play around with something that you wouldn't have thought of, you know, purchasing before. And just overall, I think it's a better licensing model because you have fewer SKUs you have to worry about when it comes to renewals. You know, it's just, okay, I'm renewing this one SKU and it includes all the features that I need, as opposed to going through a laundry list of items. So yeah, I think it's a great model and I think it just makes life easier all around.
You brought up a good point, and I love this. One of my previous leaders was always saying the phrase or just calling out two things, scalability and sustainability. Right. And having SaaS is you don't have to stress about sustaining it. And the scalability, like you just mentioned, I'd rather have it and not need it than need it and not have it. Right. So when you're getting all those features, let's say that we have an initial project to launch, you know, just a piece of the feature set. Right. That's the immediate ask. But after we're, you know, getting momentum, we're past that, I have all these other features that now I can start scaling into. As my organization is able, and I don't have to worry about the cost creep as much, right? Because I'm not looking at a whole new tool. You know, working with my ITSM customers, right? It's the same concept. If they just want basic ticketing, cool, you got basic ticketing. But if you wanted to start expanding into using the change feature, the problem, asset discovery, they're there if you want them, right? You get it even if you're not using it. And so it's better to have it and not need it than need it and not have it. And I think SaaS definitely does a lot. Just like you didn't know you wanted to watch that one weird show on Hulu that came up next. I had it and didn't know I needed it, but all of a sudden it's on and now I'm like, oh, that was a really good movie.
Yeah, and now you're binge watching a series you had no idea about.
Yeah.
We had a great customer success story just recently of that very scenario where they were using one part of the functionality, and it brings us back to the beginning of the conversation. We're able to really utilize the benefits of tools consolidation, because as they realized that they hadn't deployed these other features and functionalities, that they could offload some legacy tools that nobody was keeping up with or using, and have them all in one place, one single source of truth. So no, that's super cool.
I think it's also cool when we think about hosted SaaS solutions, kind of like Aldo, you guys are experts at discovery research for tools and things like that. When you're using a tool that's SaaS and hosted by a provider, you don't have to be experts at hosting your tool. You don't have to be experts at managing your tool, right? That's what the hosting is for. That's part of the value that you're getting. So it's, you know, leave it to the experts, which is the ones who built and are hosting the tool, to improve, design, and manage the sustainability of that platform.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, everyone's always traditionally run into issues from a resource perspective. You know, you're building the server to manage your environment. You really just want to focus on managing your environment, not managing the resources. So yeah, that's what a SaaS platform helps out with.
Maybe to wrap us out, you can kind of talk to us just about the relationship that SHI and SolarWinds has had over the past however many years. Remind me what it is now.
Yeah, I had done a presentation to the SolarWinds team a while ago, and I was actually pretty surprised to find out SolarWinds and SHI have been for a partner for more than 20 years. And I think SolarWinds has only been around for, 24, 25-ish years. SHI has been around for over 30 years, so we've been around for a long time. We're, you know, $14 billion company now, but back in the day, you know, we started off as a, you know, $1 million company. So both organizations have grown exponentially since then, but it's kind of cool that we've had this long-standing partnership and relationship, and we've both grown, both evolved. So yeah, it's pretty cool and interesting. And, you know, like you mentioned early on too, we're an elite partner, so we're the highest level partner. And I think SolarWinds has really expanded their partnership program. I think last year I was actually fortunate enough to go receive our awards at the last partner summit, which we received 4 awards. I will brag, which is pretty cool. You know, I don't remember all the awards, but I know that, you know, the big one being the partner of the year. So that was pretty cool.
That's awesome. I love to hear that. And we certainly know we can't do it without the support of amazing resellers like yourself.
Well, just too many awards to count. I couldn't keep up.
All right, Aldo, while we like to have a little bit of fun with our guests and ask a few rapid fire questions just to get to know you and your personality a little bit more, we're going to start with if you could travel to the past or the future, which one would you be choosing?
Future, for sure.
Awesome. Good. I feel like people who want to travel to the future have a different outlook than people to the past, and I really appreciate it. I'm myself a past guy. I'm like, oh, let me go to the past. I want to, you know, like I've seen Back to the Future. Let me play that Farmer's Almanac. Let me win some money. But someone out there, just like you're, you know, a researcher, you got to get out in the future and see what's going on. So that's cool.
Yeah, I feel like I know I'm an optimist. So I just think, you know, what's ahead and what's out there is kind of cool. You know, a little curious.
See if the aliens took over Earth in 20 years,
right,
or something.
Or if we get along.
Speaking of, not a follow-up, but still on the same kind of sci-fi-ish topic. If there was a city in space that you could just go live at for some time, would you go live at a city in space?
Yeah, I probably would.
So far, we're 2 for 2 on the same answers, Aldo.
Yeah, Ashley, yours was the caveat that it had to be finite, right?
That's true. Yes, I was like, I'm not signing up for a forever space experiment, but it's like, oh, you get to check this out for, I'd say anything under 6 months. I could be okay with that.
Yeah, I think I can't remember, me and my family were driving somewhere and that question came up. I think it was because there was a recent, trip out to space, and it was, if you have to go and you can't come back, probably not doing that. But if you get to come back, yeah, definitely.
There you go. What is your favorite tech invention?
Oh, tech invention. I really don't consider myself a techie. I've got a lot of friends that, they consider themselves techie. I mean, they've got so many toys, whatever comes up. I'd almost say I'm kind of old school. So I'm a car guy. So I enjoy cars. So I don't even know if you'd consider that tech, but I enjoy cars a lot.
How about the wheel? There you go. There's wheels on a car.
I used to have a 68 Mustang and I'm in the market to buy another one because I sold it about 15 years ago. So I had my grandfather on my mom's side was born in 1904. He's since passed, but he was 104 when he passed. And I was like, just imagine all the things that he's seen in his lifetime, right? Just the car and how cars or automobiles have evolved. They're still around, but they've evolved. So I still consider that to be a tech thing because it's ever evolving and gone from very mechanical to now very electronic or digitized.
No, I think that's a fantastic answer. I got to know what color was the Mustang?
Blue, actually. So I had a friend that was a painter and we created a custom blue color. I like royal blue is my favorite color. And we kind of did a Mitsubishi blue with a pearl in it. And so it came out kind of cool.
Very nice. Very jealous and very nice. I'm going to steal one of Ashley's questions because I really like this one. I'm glad she added it. But if you could pick any talent in the world to just give yourself, right, what would a talent be? What talent would you most like to have?
The ability to play a musical instrument. I am like so not musically inclined at all. It's horrible. Like a guitar, piano, probably guitar. I think that's kind of cool when people can play guitar.
Yeah, you can carry it with you. If you can carry a piano with you, that'd be pretty cool too. But
yeah, a little organ.
I also wish I possessed that ability. But you know what they say, it's never too late to start, right? So
That's true.
Maybe we'll end it with the last one as, what do you consider your greatest achievement?
Oh gosh, that's a hard one. I'm old, so I've done a lot of things. This is a really hard one. I think my family, just raising a successful family. I have two daughters and just recently had my second grandson. So I've got two grandsons, still married. So I think all that stuff's pretty cool.
Very admirable, and congratulations.
Nothing wrong with a good, wholesome answer like that, Aldo.
That's right. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It was a very enlightening conversation. Aldo, thanks for hopping on with us.
Cool. Glad to be here. Appreciate you guys inviting me.
And thank you, listeners, for joining us on another episode of the SolarWinds Tech Pod. I'm your host, Ashley Adams, joined by fellow host Sean Sebring. If you haven't yet, make sure to subscribe and follow for more Tech Pod content. Thanks for tuning in.
All right, let's see what this puppy can do.
Computer.
Hello, user.
Computer, I want to listen to a new podcast.
Compiling. There are over 3 million podcasts.
Ooh, okay. I want a podcast that talks about technology.
Filter it. There are approximately 90,000 podcasts about technology.
All right. Getting there. A podcast about technology in movies and TV shows.
Filter it. There are over 500 podcasts featuring technology in movies and TV shows.
A podcast about technology in movies and TV shows has one host who knows a lot about technology and one that knows nothing. Oh, and it's got to be funny.
Filter it. According to my search, there is only one.
Excellent. Computer, play.
We're in. I'm going to reroute the thermo drive.
Electronic mail failure.
Stored forever in a virtual library.
Computers can't swim.
They can now.
Data termites, a website. It's alive.
Movies. And mainframes.
Download Movies and Mainframes wherever you get your podcasts.